Each year, about 2.5 million Americans die. For the majority, deaths happen in a hospital, nursing home, or long-term care facility. This hour, we pick up the story right there with how funerals are changing. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we'll take you inside a funeral home to hear how a funeral director does the work. We'll visit a cemetery where a plot is being prepared. And we'll hear how some people are choosing not to use a funeral director, but to do all the work, the visitation, the funeral service, and the burial themselves. What made a funeral you've been to especially memorable, especially meaningful? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Each year, about 2.5 million Americans die. And for the majority, about 70%, deaths happen in a hospital or a nursing home or a long-term care facility. And that's where we pick up the story this hour with the funeral and how funerals are changing. Later this hour, we visit a cemetery where a plot is being prepared. We'll find out a little bit about that. We'll also find out about some of the latest trends in funerals, and we'll hear about how some families are choosing do-it-yourself funerals. We'd like to hear from you this hour as well. What made a funeral you've been to especially memorable, especially meaningful? That's what it's about, isn't it? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk or post something on our Facebook page. So we're looking for a funeral you've been to that was especially memorable or meaningful. What made it so? And before we get into the conversation about some funeral trends coming up, let's get a little sense of the process that most people in the United States choose, using a funeral home to take care of preparation of the body, the visitation, and preparation for cremation or burial. Producer Ben Stanton went along for a tour of the Jones Eden Funeral Home in Washington, Iowa. He brings us this behind-the-scenes talk with a funeral director.
My name is Marty Beanblossom. I have been with the Jones Funeral Home since about 1989. So now we will go into the main part of the funeral home.
There's office space, chapel, and the room used for most visitations has a large entryway here.
Just a few steps that we will be going down.
Now we go downstairs where there's a showroom with metal and wood caskets. Beanblossom and I now walk through the doorway into a room that's right underneath a garage upstairs. In that garage above us is the minivan that's used to transport a person who has died from the place of death back to the funeral home. Then they use an elevator leading down to where we are now next to this room.
We call it our preparation room. This room is where we often get asked the most questions. On the outside of the door, there are two stickers posted. One is caution, biological hazard, authorized personnel only. And then the other sign says danger, do not smoke, eat, or drink in this area. There are chemicals that we use in the embalming process that you would not want to be around unless you have the proper training to be around those chemicals.
When he's working, Beanblossom would first put on safety equipment and turn on a ventilation system.
What we do in this room, everything is done with the utmost of respect and care for the person who has passed away. In the preparation room, we have two embalming stations. There are two tables. Right now, they're both covered with a white sheet. We have two embalming machines.
Chemicals are mixed in embalming machines depending on the cause of death. Other work is done to prepare the person, given that the body will be on display for people to see.
The newer embalming machine is basically a square stainless steel container. The older machine is a taller container that has a glass cylinder on it. They both do the exact same thing. Everything is done by force injection. Years ago, we're talking many years ago, the funeral director used to mix the chemical in a bowl. The bowl would hang from the ceiling, and it was all done by gravity injection. We do not do that anymore. It's done by force injection through these machines. The individual is moved onto the table. There are blocks that the individual is placed on. So they're not physically touching the table. There's a space between their back and the surface of the table. We constantly have water that is cleansing the table. It's a very clean process. The embalming process is a very clean process. We make a small incision.
That incision is made in the neck.
For a point of entry for the embalming process, we raise the carotid artery, and then we start the embalming process. Try to use as little cosmetic as possible, depending on the circumstance. Once that cosmetizing and the person is dressed, then we would place in a casket.
Bean Blossom says the larger purpose of a funeral home handling funeral arrangements is not to remove the family from the reality of death, but to help them through that reality.
Come face to face with it, accept it, and then help them move on and take some steps into normalcy.
For his part, personally, Bean Blossom says that having a supportive family is especially important.
And thankfully, I have a very understanding wife, and my kids, when I have to come back for visitation and come back for work, that's normal for them. They don't know me doing anything different than that. So that's kind of a normal thing for them. There are times that we struggle as funeral directors emotionally. I'm not going to say that we don't. There are some circumstances that are much harder to deal with than others, especially when there's a young person or an infant or a small child that passes away. That's emotionally very challenging for funeral directors. Not saying that an older person, that minimizes the fact that, oh, they're 90 years old, they passed away. That does not minimize the fact. I can, in my own mind, say, you know, they lived a full life. This is part of the life cycle. When it's a younger person, it's harder for me to say that. Good family support, good faith background, and colleagues that understand and are willing to help out are three very important things.
Funeral director Marty Beanblossom there at Jones Eden Funeral Home in Washington, Iowa, giving a tour, a behind-the-scenes tour and talk with our producer, Ben Stanton. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about funeral trends this hour. I want to reach out to you and ask, what made a funeral you've been to especially memorable, especially meaningful? Have you noticed any new trends at a funeral that you've been to? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Find us on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining me now, Suzanne Gable is with us, Executive Director of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association. Suzanne Gable, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask the same question that I just threw out to our listeners. Tell us about some of the trends in funerals in recent years.
More and more personalization is probably the biggest trend in funeral service. Funeral directors want families to be as involved as they want to be and to remember their loved one in the way that their loved one wanted to be remembered and also in a way that will assist them in saying goodbye.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways people we go about this personalization?
Just ask your funeral director, tell your funeral director what you want and how you want the loved one remembered. They can do it with videos of photos. They can do it with just about any way you want. I know recently we had a funeral director who, when an infant died, the family brought in the baby bed. So there are just all kinds of ways, however is most comfortable and most important to the family.
You know, one thing I noticed after, growing up here in Iowa and then living abroad for a while, and in some countries, personalization is done on the gravestones with actually pictures, weather-resistant pictures and so forth. Is that sort of a trend here?
Walking cemeteries, you can see all kinds of different things, and you can see how memorialization on the markers has evolved as well. There are even some that have QR codes that you can put your phone up to and get the obituary and just eternal memorialization that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know cremation has increased dramatically, the people choosing that. So can you give us an idea of how much?
Absolutely. Nationally, in 1960, the cremation rate was 3.56%, and in 2012, it was 43.2%. Iowa lags a little bit behind the country, where we're at about 32% cremation.
Mm-hmm. Why would there be that dramatic increase? So what's behind that? Do you know?
Yes. I think it's because more and more families are mobile and they don't have one spot to come back and visit to, or they choose not to. So the cremated remains are more mobile. They can pick up an urn, or they can put them in a niche in a mausoleum where they're living now, and if they move, they can move them to another niche. I think that's part of it. I think that cremation is just the form of disposition. It's not the in place of a funeral, and so you can do the full funeral, and families can rent a casket to have the visitation, and then after the service, they can their loved one can go to the crematory, and they can do either a burial or take the cremated remains with them after everybody's gone to lunch or whatever the family chooses to do at that point.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the way you said that may be a misconception, that you have to choose either a visitation or a cremation, but you could have both.
Absolutely, you can. Mm-hmm. And more and more families are choosing that when they choose cremation as a form of disposition.
Uh-huh. And the casket is rented, did you say?
You can rent a casket, yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. That's one choice there. I want to add to our conversation, Josh Slocum is with us as well, Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. It's a nonprofit consumer education and watchdog group. Josh is also co-author of a book titled Final Rites, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. Josh, are you there?
Hi there. Thank you.
Let me start off. Thank you for joining us. Let me start off with the same question I just asked Suzanne. What are you seeing in terms of changes in funerals and the way we view death and say goodbye to our loved ones?
Well, Suzanne is right. Cremation is probably the single biggest ongoing change right now. And her stats are right on. It's interesting. You go around the country, and the cremation rate depends a lot on where you are. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, up in Northern California, there are some parts of the northern half of the state where it's about 90%, about 65%, I think, in Washington State. Here in Vermont, I think we're at 55%, and then, of course, in Iowa, 32%. But mm-hmm. I don't know any part of the country where it isn't growing.
Do you have anything to add to what Suzanne said about why the dramatic increase in cremation? She mentioned mobility.
I think that is one of the biggest reasons. And you know, when you talk about our funeral traditions change just as our living traditions change. And we don't live on the Andy Griffith Show anymore, right? We don't all graduate from high school, go to the local college, then work at the local factory and be buried at the local town cemetery. Most of us are going to move around the country. Even our elderly parents are moving for retirement. So, you know, mom and dad may have bought 5 or 6 graves for the whole family back in 1963, but now nobody lives there.
Mm. I think also when I think about it myself, environmental concerns come into it too, because you've got vast stretches of the country in the meantime taken up by cemeteries, which can be nice things, but they can also be places to take a walk, parks and things like that, right,
sure.
Josh?
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's a popular idea that isn't quite true. We're not really running out of space for cemeteries. There are certain parts of the country, like the Boston area in New York City, where space is at a premium. But if we decided to bury all of our dead rather than cremating, we'd have plenty of land for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne, let me go back to you. What about, I've known a trend for some years that's been green or natural burials. Is that a trend as well that we're tracking?
Well, there are many shades of green. And so what green is kind of depends on what the individual wants and how their loved one wishes to have a green funeral or to be remembered in a green funeral.
It can mean anything from what to what?
Anything from no embalming or a biodegradable shroud or casket to having locally grown foods for the luncheon, carpooling to the funeral, or local flowers.
Mm-hmm. Josh, your comment on green or natural burials.
The thing I like to remind people is that a green or a natural funeral isn't really about what you buy or necessarily whether you have secured space in an officially designated green cemetery. green funerals or natural funerals are about what you, as Suzanne said, about what you don't have in a lot of cases. So even if you're going to do something, you know, with a conventional funeral home and cemetery, you know, saying no to embalming, saying no to the metal or non-degradable casket, these are green choices that actually save you money as well. Now, of course, you can go much further and go all the way to a specific natural burial cemetery, but there are options in between.
Josh Slocum, please stay with us, Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, and Suzanne Gable, Executive Director of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association. We're talking about funeral trends this hour. We'd like to hear from you as well. Perhaps you've been to a funeral within the last few years that you thought was especially memorable, especially meaningful. Tell us about that experience. What made it so? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more talk on funeral trends. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're looking at trends in funerals. And before we continue our conversation in the studio, let's take a quick trip to hear what it sounds like to prepare a cemetery plot for a burial, this one at Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City. For the burial of a casket, this crew would be getting what looks like a small backhoe ready for digging the grave. But instead, on this morning, in early October, they're putting hand tools in the back of a small trailer. That's because they're getting a plot ready for putting cremated remains, or cremains, in a plot. And that requires a much smaller area to be dug up. Out at the plot, Todd McInville uses a metal detector to find the edges of the marked plot. They allow up to 4 urns to be buried in a single plot. Once they determine where the plot is, they first dig out a small section of the sod and set it aside. They'll need that later to put back over the hole once the burial takes place. They use ordinary shovels to dig down about 40 inches, a little over 3 feet. This crew has been doing a lot of this type of work this year. Cemetery Director Russ Buffington says that compared with casket burials, there have been many cremated remains buried this year.
One thing that has, I think, is changing is there's a lot more cremains in comparison to full burials. I think that trend has hit. I mean, I think we've had 5 full burials since I started in February. You know, on average, 8 funerals a month. Some months a little bit more than that, some less. But probably average 1 or less than 1 a month on the full burials.
So that's, on average, out of 8 burials, only a couple full casket burials, and the rest were cremains. The work is usually completed a day or so before a burial is scheduled. Also helping work on this day, Corey Reynolds and Ewan Hamilton. Again, some sounds of preparing a burial plot from Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about funeral trends. Our guests in the studio, Suzanne Gable is with us, Executive Director of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association. By phone, Josh Slocum, Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. It's a nonprofit consumer education watchdog group. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Asking the question, what made the funeral especially memorable in your recollection? Perhaps some funeral you want to point out that was especially memorable. 1-866-780-9100. Talk about more trends with Suzanne and Josh. But let's go to this phone call. First of all, Dayton is joining us from Mason City. Hi, Dayton. You've been listening. What's on your mind regarding funerals?
Yeah, I was wondering on the legality of a type of funeral that I had heard about. One of my friends had told me about a green funeral where they had buried a corpse and planted a tree over the remains. I was wondering if that was legal in Iowa.
Suzanne Gable, do you know about that?
No, I don't know about that, and I'm not sure if it's legal in Iowa. A lot would depend upon cemetery regulations, if it's private land, if it's public land. There are many factors that would determine whether that was right or not.
Josh, perhaps you can give us a national...
I think I can help on that.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
First of all, green burial or natural burial, like I said before, it's really all about no embalming, no metal casket, as little material used as possible. There's no law in any state in the country, none whatsoever, that even requires embalming or a casket as a condition of burial in a cemetery. So in that sense, there isn't a legal impediment to skipping embalming in most cases and the casket. Cemetery regulations, of course, are set by the cemetery, so some will allow this, some won't. But burial on your own private land in Iowa outside city limits is permissible. It's something that you need to talk to your local administrator about, your zoning office. But somebody who had rural farmland who wanted to do a burial like our great-grandparents did could certainly do so.
Mm-hmm. Within city limits, it's generally not accepted.
Correct.
Okay. Can I add a little more to that?
Yeah, Suzanne, please.
I do know about the burial on private land. And for that, Iowa does have a law that to infinity, there has to be an entrance and an egress for eternal visitation of that now cemetery.
Okay, for infinity, for forever.
It'll be on the abstract. It will be forever, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I know also going back to having lived abroad in Germany, for instance, you rent your plot for a period of, I think, as short as 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and then it's turned over. It's opened up again for the remains are removed, and it's opened up for another person to rent for a period of decades. Yep. So that's an interesting difference. Right, Josh? You've heard of that, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Wall Street Journal just had an article on burials in Norway. In Western Europe, as you say, the graves are not considered a permanent feature of the land. The idea of a private property sort of grave to infinity is a North American concept that isn't necessarily shared in other places, mm-hmm. probably because of space.
Right. We have a lot of space compared to the Europeans, generally mm-hmm. speaking. Suzanne, there's something starting in the spring here in Iowa. Iowa will have an electronic death registration system in place. Tell us briefly about that.
Yes. The Iowa Department of Public Health has undertaken an initiative to bring all of their vital records under the Iowa Vital Event System into place, and they are starting with the electronic death registration system. We hope to have it up and running in April of 2014. There have been many, many, many hours put into pulling this together. The state has bought an off-the-shelf product, meaning something that is a basic program software, and it's customized for Iowa's needs and laws. And starting in the spring, funeral directors and physicians should be able to complete death certificates much more quickly because they will be able to do it via the electronic death registration system.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Sue in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue.
Hi. This is the most wonderful subject. My husband had a chronic terminal illness that took several years to take his life. He's been gone now 8.5 years, and people still stop occasionally and tell me what great services he had.
Oh, that's fabulous. Sue, what made it so great?
Because it was just Bill. He worked at the local Hy-Vee. He had his own company. He was a people person. And he always said that you don't grieve for me. You wear red and you have a party. And we had our funeral director. We use a local funeral home that we know the family we're involved with. And our funeral director, and there was a new gal. This was her first funeral that she helped us, that she'd helped with. And she still, as I go to other funerals, still mentions that his was the most fun. Because we did exactly what he wanted. And he loved the young people and worked with a lot of young people who he had watched grow up here in town, of course. And so the services were at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he was cremated, which was both of our wishes. His obituary was written by him, his wishes, everything was done because we had time to do that together and with our children. And so when the services happened, they were at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they were just exactly what he wanted. No flowers except for 3 bouquets from me, our children, and we had 2 grandchildren at that time. And that was it. And a picture of him that was adorable from when he was a little boy.
Oh.
And that was all there was. And our minister knew us, and the stories were great. But then afterwards, we went to a church where I'm involved, and we had a picnic. A young lady we've watched grow up, our dads grew up together, has a catering service. They brought the grill because Bill loved having a weenie roast. So she had come to the house ahead of time. She had gotten my recipe, and I'd showed her how to make deviled eggs. She got our favorite chocolate cake recipe. I showed her how to make white frosting.
That sounds wonderful, Sue.
We just had a ball. The next morning at the internment,
yep.
People stood and told the best stories. About Bill. And we laughed. And there was only a tear there because we'd laughed so hard that there were tears. But it's comforting for the family. And it was great for the people that 8.5 years later, they say, yeah, that was really great.
Sue,
and there was even peanut butter and jelly there and a couple of loaves of white bread because that's what he and our granddaughter, she was only 4 at the time, and
Sue,
that's what they fixed.
Sue, that sounds like a wonderful memory, a wonderful goodbye. Thank you so much for calling and sharing with us. That Sue in Pleasant Hill, thank you. And running short of time, Sue brings up an important point. So, Suzanne, when you think about your own funeral, what should a person, we hope we have many, many years to come. None of us know how many years we have to come. But what thoughts should a person give to their own funeral before they die? Who should they communicate these thoughts to so that you have a funeral like Bill did and just have a great memory, a great goodbye in everybody's memory?
Well, they need to talk to their loved ones. They need to tell them how they want to be remembered, how they mattered in their loved ones' lives, and share that with them over and over and over again so that their families can know that they're doing the right things, not only to commemorate their loved one's life, but also to take care of themselves in commemorating the loss of this person in their lives.
Josh Slocum, I know that we mentioned that in cremation, Iowa is a little bit behind the national trend here, but there's another national trend, and I don't know if it's arrived here in Iowa that you talk about. Home funerals can happen, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because I think playing off what Sue said, I have often found that the family involvement in carrying out the funeral process is what makes something very meaningful and memorable to people. Having something to do that's a tangible expression of your love and your grief and your community when somebody dies. And this is going to surprise your listeners, but it's only because most of us have a pretty short historical memory. It is perfectly legal in most states, including Iowa, to do as our great-grandparents did and to take care of our own loved ones when they die. And yes, I do mean, if you wish, you can have the wake at home, you can complete the paperwork, and you can do the transportation. Now, it's not something that's for everybody, but your great-grandparents would instantly have recognized this.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any of the historical explanation for, of course, that's the way, pioneers came to this country.
Sure.
They did it that way, and we got out of the habit of doing that. Why?
Well, because we grew into a more urban country. We started to die in hospital rather than at home. And, along with urbanization and mobility, came a need for a lot of people for professional services, which is where the funeral home came from. But it's only been, maybe 130 years since it was more common for the family to do this, but it changed so quickly that people have forgotten. And one of the things I like people to know, we don't make any judgments about what kind of funeral somebody should have. That's for the family to decide. But just knowing that you can actually do it yourself and knowing that option is out there helps people look at what personalization really means to them. And any viewer that would like to explore that, there's a wonderful PBS documentary called A Family Undertaking, which was aired in 2004, and it follows 5 families from around the country who did a very traditional private home funeral. And I challenge anyone to get through that without a lot of tears, and a lot of happy tears, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about home funerals, wouldn't there be, you have to pay attention to laws, Josh Slocum. I don't expect you to know about the laws in Iowa. Perhaps you do. You do know. Oh, well, we have a few minutes. Tell us briefly, what do people have to think about when they think about
that? Sure. These are pretty common, and this is part of my co-written book, Final Rites, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. We researched the funeral and burial law specific to each state. and put them in plain English for people. So what has to happen in Iowa is similar to what has to happen in most states. When somebody dies, you need to have the death certified. That means the last attending physician, the family doctor, or in the absence of a physician, the coroner or medical examiner needs to certify the death and sign that death certificate, whether it be on paper or electronically. Once that has been filed, the state's interest in the death has been discharged. They know that there isn't any foul play. That has to be filed with your local registrar or health department. And before you go to your family cemetery or to another cemetery, you've got to have a transportation permit. But other than that, making sure that the body gets to a crematory, to the family cemetery, to the cemetery, you have a lot of choices in between. You can have a home viewing. You can have none whatsoever. I helped a family here in Vermont 2 weeks ago, desperately poor. Their son had died by suicide in one of our state prisons, and they could not even afford the least expensive commercial cremation. And I told them, said, I can help you fill this out. I can show you that you can do it yourself. We found a wonderful funeral home that donated a casket. I put it in the back of my Prius and brought it to the family. And they were just overwhelmed with the fact that not only could they afford it, but they felt like they were doing something for RJ, the guy who died. They said, you know, we took care of him at the end.
Okay. Suzanne Gable, we have to go in a minute or two. What do you see in the future? I don't know if home funerals are something you're seeing in Iowa as well.
No, not there isn't a great push for them in Iowa as of now. I'm just proud to be part of this wonderful business that is so trusted and will work with families in any way, shape, or form. They can even help a family do a funeral at home if that's what they really want. And then in that case, they're there to help with obtaining the death certificate, obtaining the burial transit permit for them, things like that. Funeral directors are just there to help the family do what they need at their greatest time of need.
Okay, Suzanne Gable, thank you very much for joining us, Executive Director of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association. Thank you to you, Suzanne, for coming into our Des Moines studio. Josh Slocum, thank you for joining us by phone, Executive Director of Funeral Consumers Alliance, and that's a nonprofit education organization. Also, you're a co-author of Final Rights, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. Josh, thank you for giving us some insights as well.
Thank you very much.
And before we go today, finally, another alternative that may interest you, as long as we're on the topic of, thinking about what should happen with your body when what did Shakespeare say? You shuffle off this mortal coil. Brian Chapman is with us. He's a mortician at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, joining me now in our Iowa City studio to talk about the University of Iowa's Deeded Body Program. Brian Chapman, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I understand that any competent person over 18 years of age may donate his or her body for medical education and research to the university, the Deeded Body Program. What are the bodies needed for?
Well, we actually use a person that donates their body for multiple things. We have medical students that are going to school. We have physical therapists, physician assistants, dental students. So we have a wide array of people that actually utilize the cadavers. Mm-hmm. Our donors are utilized up to the, best possible case that we can actually provide for the students, and they take that with them for the rest of their lives.
And having spoken with medical students and learning to be medical students, I know the first encounter with the human body, a cadaver, is really something that any student of medicine never, ever forgets. And one of the things is the great respect that has to be dealt with, used in such a situation, isn't it?
Correct. We take our donors with as much respect as possible. Every year at the beginning of the medical school, we have all the med students come to our gross anatomy lab with the donors that are actually out covered up, and we have a minister come give a presentation. Our physician or our instructors actually talk about the respect of the people and the great gift that these people actually did in donating their body for science, and that we need to take that with us and remember that at all times.
When people want to contact the University of Iowa Deeded Body Program, What are their chief motivations? Why do people want to do this?
You know, I have found that families are motivated simply because of education and a lot of historical value to it. We have families that are actually signed up. We'll look through our database and we'll see multiple people from the same household that over the years have signed up and from the same town. So I think the great people of Iowa have allowed us to actually have a great program here at this great university.
Mm-hmm. How many bodies are donated in, say, a year? Can you give us an idea?
Our program is probably in the middle to the larger side, and we get somewhere between 200 to 240 donors a year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that varies from year to year.
That would also correspond with the need at the College of Medicine.
Correct. And our need is pretty high. We're always running to the point where we are keeping what we need, but we also are always kind of at need for people as well. So, you know, we're not really have people, we don't have too many, but we are always in need of having someone come.
Since we talked about funerals and trends in funerals for most of this hour, but tell us, Brian Chapman, how this changes anything when it comes to saying goodbye to a loved one in terms of a funeral, a burial, or cremation. How does this deeded body program fit in with those, or does it?
Sure. Well, our program has been set up with funeral directors that were actually in their previous lives in the funeral home working. And with the College of Medicine, they've worked over the years to provide a program that actually works in conjunction with funeral homes. So these funeral homes, if the family desires to have a full visitation, a funeral the day before, and then rather than burying or cremating, they can bring the person to us, and we will accept the donor as long as, you know, everything is okay at that point. So if the family wants us to utilize the person as a donor, we will accept them with, as, you know, as much as possible.
Okay. We want to go out with one more call, but to tell us before we do, Brian Chapman, how we get in touch, find out more about the University of Iowa Deeded Body Program.
Sorry. So people can always email me at brian-chapman@uiowa.edu. We also have a website at the College of Medicine website. It's actually the Anatomy and Cell Biology. It's a deeded body program, and the forms to fill out to actually apply are on the website. I'll always mail them out or email them to people. Call me as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you very much, Brian Chapman, mortician at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Let's go quickly to Victoria. She called from Fort Atkinson. We've got less than a minute for you, Victoria. I know you had a burial, a funeral, a little story, a vignette to tell us. Please be quick.
Yes, this June we lost our granddaughter
at
34 weeks. She lived her full life in her mom's love and dad's love, but we had a green burial for her, and it was so important for us, for my son to be able to help dig the grave, for them to be able to hold her in their arms during the service while the rain poured down on us, and to put the roses in on top of her in the basket I had made, and she was dressed in a dress her other grandma had made, and she just... It changed our lives to be able to remember her and honor her and have her touch our lives and so many lives just in that short time.
Victoria, we're so sorry for your family's loss, and thank you for sharing that with us. I wish we had more time to talk with you about it. Thank you, Victoria, in Fort Atkinson.
She's under an oak tree looking up at the sky.
Oh, very good. That's a nice memory. Victoria, thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
That ends our look at funeral trends. Thank you so much for the contributions this hour from our listeners. That really makes these programs especially meaningful to us as we share ideas about funerals or other ideas. River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese. John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ben Kiefer.